In a half hour, we're going to get down and we're going to talk about mental health with a gentleman who will be open and honest about being diagnosed as bipolar. That in a half hour. This is News Talk Tonight on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.
This is News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeart Radio Talk Network.
I should have thanked Richard Krause for filling in on Thursday and Friday. Appreciate that a lot. Thank you very much, Richard. What we've been seeing a lot lately in our own backyard is a lot of rage because of a piece of material. Like, it's a piece of material. I've heard some people say, oh, so what? A piece of material is going to stop kids from committing suicide? Well, you know what? If it's not that big of a deal, then why not let it stand? What I think is interesting is, like, where is all of this rage coming from people who are, for the most part, the freedom crowd and the crowd that I thought were down with the teachings of Jesus, but they're using a different part of the Bible to get to the point that they want to make. But one of the things that I keep on hearing about is they are rubbing it in our face, or they're shoving it down our throat. When many people, especially if you're an older person from the LGBT community, you've like grown up your entire life and only seeing, you know, people on TV or whatever being straight didn't make you straight. So I'm not sure how letting kids know that we're accepting of anyone and how they identify is going to be a problem. But we talked earlier today to Barry Adam. Barry Adam is a sociologist who has studied this kind of thing through the years. And we asked him off the top what his unique qualifications are.
So I'm a sociologist who has studied the LGBT movement and been a writer on changes in the
I went over, right?
I guess historical changes affecting LGBT people and their rights over the years.
Are you surprised at where we are right now?
Not entirely, because I think there is often a presumption that history moves forward in a kind of liberal progressive manner, but for those who've looked at the LGBT history over the years, there's a certain cyclical nature to it. So there's often two steps forward, one step back. And we seem to be in a period when there's a reaction occurring, at least in some quarters, especially in the U.S. and a few places here in Canada.
Do you think there's any reason for that sticking its head out right now?
You know, there's been a constituency that I think has been fearful of social change. And in recent years, we've seen the idea that there's something like a gender ideology that is getting too popular, at least among people who think that boys should be real men and girls should be ladies.
Yeah.
There's a sense that the questioning about gender conformity, which has been occurring in recent years, is a bit scary.
Yeah. But history shows us that that's something that's been around for centuries.
Oh, absolutely. It has been around for centuries. And the question really is, how are people who are gender nonconforming treated? So I think it's a bit of a mistake of thinking that if people are treated well, then somehow there's going to be a big change in how gender occurs among youth in society. But really, it's a question of how safe are people of all different kinds of gender expression in places like schools.
Yeah. Was there any point during those centuries that it was accepted as normal?
Well, you know, we've seen a lot of changes in style. It's often pointed out that, you know, you look at pictures of people like Louis XIV, and he was dressed up in a way which was considered absolutely respectable and authoritative for his era, but would largely be seen as drag today.
Yeah.
By his, you know, his silk and ruffles and so on. So there's often changing notions of what appropriate gender expression should be.
Was there a certain time in terms of the West where things changed, or were we always on this kind of plane where it was on the fringes?
It's that's a hard question. There's, you know, all societies have some kind of notion of gender, and the question is how strict they are about enforcing rules around what the gender propriety looks like. In the West, you know, there's an argument, there's a lot of historians that are trying to figure out, you know, where these changes occurred. Englishmen, it seems, for example, in the 18th century, were able to kiss each other on the cheek. It was perfectly acceptable. And then something changed, and they're still trying to figure out why something changed in the 18th century. And, you know, Latins can still do it. So yeah. there's a lot of movements that occur there's a lot of ferment, I guess, in how gender expression is constructed and what is considered acceptable and what's not over time.
Because we're talking about over time, at what point in time did religion start to dictate the norm, if you know what I mean?
Well, you know, the gender is not that clearly delineated in religion. So it has migrated over time as well, I think. There hasn't been a single fixed position, but we do see increasingly these days that there's a notion, especially in the U.S., of a Christian right and of what it means to be a Christian, that which is highly conservative.
Yeah.
But, that still raises the issue of how this highly conservative notion has captured notions of what Christianity should look like, because there have been no lack of progressive and liberal Christians as well. So how is it that they have gotten the upper hand, at least in visibility in recent years?
In defining, hey, you're not Christian if you don't believe, if you believe that we should be accepting homosexuality.
Yeah, precisely.
Okay, so is there a certain point in our recent history, and in our recent history, I'm talking about, I guess, the last century, that things started to be defined that way? Because it's not something that would have been prevalent back in the days of Jesus or 1,000 years ago, or was it?
In terms of LGBT history, there's an evolution. I mean, it gets down to issues. I don't want to get into the weeds about this, but there are issues of methodology because, before the 19th century, there was only a very few people who were really literate in Western societies.
Yeah.
So we get a picture of what their societies are like that are filtered through the eyes of educated, privileged men. And so the lives of women and minorities and around LGBT people is often not that easy to glean. And it's a question of looking at certain kinds of traces, you know, and criminal records and so on to try to figure that out.
Okay.
So we only have more like maybe two centuries of history that is really better documented. The French Revolution actually decriminalized homosexuality in the late 18th century. And then Napoleon conquered much of Europe and established the Napoleonic Code as the foundation of European legal systems throughout all of Western Europe. And so Western Europe has legalized homosexuality really for a couple of centuries.
Okay, we'll pick up on that when we come back. That is Barry Adam, who is a sociologist, University of Windsor, and he studied the history of the way people have treated the LGBTQ community and what is going on right now. And why is it going on? Could it have anything to do with the fact that Republicans down in the States tried to scare everybody about washrooms and trans people a couple of years ago, but that didn't work? So, hey, the kids, the same thing that they did in the 1970s when Anita Bryant was trying to mobilize people against the LGBTQ community. They found something that touched a nerve and made something up called What About the Kids? Next. have the podcast that you can listen to anytime on the iHeart Talk Radio Network. Please go to wherever you get your favorite podcasts and follow and subscribe. We were talking to Barry Adam, who's a professor at the University of Windsor. He's a sociologist who has studied the history of the way the LGBTQ community has been treated. We talked about the fact that in the 1970s, they weren't making any headway into how they were trying to slow down the civil rights movement, if you will, for people in the LGBTQ community. So they pivoted to what this might do to the children. Even though that wasn't backed up by facts, they managed to go quite far with Anita Bryant and that talking point. And that's kind of where we are right now, aren't we, Barry?
Yes, the child molester notion has been a strong one that has been harped on. I think it has to do with the fact that through much of the 1950s, talk about sexuality and certainly homosexuality was largely taboo in the mainstream press, except for crime news. And crime news included, you know, various kinds of sexual assaults and assaults on children and so on. So that often became the only reference that people had to homosexuality. It was either silence or this notion that it was some kind of criminal behavior,
yeah,
often linked to children.
And when did that start to change in America? Because it was in the 1970s that things started to change a little bit after Anita Bryant, no?
Yeah, I mean, the movement gains a lot of steam in the 1970s, and I think there's a lot of rethinking that occurs on issues around gender and sexuality, some of it propelled by the women's movement as well. And so we see a kind of thaw in those more rigid ideas of the 1950s.
So,
but it's a gradual process. You know, in Ontario, it's 1986 before we see sexual orientation added to the Ontario Human Rights Code, for example.
Interesting. Just that doesn't seem that long ago. So reading recently, I saw that the big thing to get everybody excited a couple of years ago was, hey, washrooms aren't going to be safe. And that didn't really resonate with anybody, although it got the odd headline. And it wasn't till they could scare people with, I don't know, drag queens reading to kids at libraries, that sort of thing. How has that arc changed in the in your view of history?
Yeah, well, I think what we've seen happening is that there have been a number of fronts in these battles. First, decriminalization, then getting sexual orientation and human rights legislation, then marriage. Trans issues were there, but I think they've become more exposed these days as the other issues have come off the agenda and become one, and public opinion has largely accepted it as fact. So now we have trans issues, which are the most exposed issues, and a lot of scare tactics about you know, the possibility of men being, I guess, preying on women in washrooms if we don't maintain gender boundaries and so on, even though they're hard-pressed to point to any examples where that's actually happened.
Yeah.
So there is this underlying anxiety that I think about shifting gender boundaries, and too often, I think, the fight sort of occurs over the heads of real people who often are just trying to be safe in their own lives, right? So trans people themselves talk a lot about just basic issues, like when they need to go to the bathroom, can't they just go to the bathroom? Because it's not a straightforward thing. If you go to a bathroom that where you don't look like the gender of the people who are there, you may be subject to a lot of pushback, even violence. But if you go to the other bathroom, then you might be subjected to a lot of pushback and violence. So they're kind of asking the question, you know, where can we go?
Yeah.
And it's a kind of basic safety issue, which then gets, you know, flipped over into this terror about, oh, this is going to mean that men can prey on women in bathrooms.
What are your thoughts of why this has resonated? I had heard that in planning this kind of stuff, that these people aren't stupid and that they can see America changing, younger, more immigrants and white folk trying to figure out, hey, how are we going to maintain our control? Let's scare them about trans people and drag queens.
It's new. It's a new topic, right? So there's not a lot out there. I think trans people are only beginning to be seen in media, and they're still not often able to speak for themselves. It's going to be a process not unlike gays and lesbians, people getting more acquainted with, more comfortable with, and recognizing the basic humanity of trans people, rather than just seeing them as kind of scary symbols of something they don't understand. It's taken a long time for that to happen for gay and lesbian people. You know, it's been a long time before they became characters on, you know, TV sitcoms and so on. And then they got to look, you know, pretty normal and ordinary.
Yeah,
but we're not there yet for trans people.
What are your thoughts on the idea that this is being shoved down anyone's throat? I'm reminded by a friend of mine who said, listen, I grew up in a time when you didn't see anybody who was in the LGBTQ community on television, and it didn't make me straight. And so people who have to walk by a flag or hear somebody in public talk about LGBT rights, they seem offended, and I'm not sure what they're afraid of.
It's a good question. You know, at a fundamental level, it's a good question about why it's so scary and why it's only scary to certain people. From a sociological viewpoint, we can see some differences. It seems less scary to urban people than rural people. It's often more scary for older people than younger people. It's often more scary for people who are scared of other races than those who aren't, and so on. And some of it just has to do with exposure. I think urban people, just to pick one of the examples, come in contact with that diversity more often than those who are in smaller places. But that's not to say that it's across the board. I mean, there are certainly trans people in smaller places that, who are kind of putting their hand up and saying, I'm here. I should be safe, too.
Yeah. Listen, thank you very much. Sorry we're short on time, Barry. Barry Adam, again, is a University of Windsor professor emeritus in sociology, and he has also studied and written about the hate on the LGBTQ community. And again, I would say, with everybody saying, oh, they're shoving this down our throat, I would have to say, if you're gay, you've seen straight images all your life, and it didn't change your sexuality, you're probably still gay. I'm not sure what seeing a flag is going to do to somebody. I'm Jim Richards. Mental Health is next on the iHeart Talk Radio Network. Oh. All right. Coming up. Still to come on the News Talk tonight, you can check out... Oh, no, I have no time. Okay, you can check out our podcast, wherever you get podcasts. And don't forget to follow and subscribe. It's real easy. Follow and subscribe wherever you find your favorite podcast. Mental Health is next here on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.